Sahana bhavatu, sahana bhunaktu, saha veryam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, so Anyway, just a little note. As I mentioned before, then the first 16 chapters of Natural Devotion, they are actually divided according to the different types of sadhana bhakti. So the first chapter is actually samanya bhakti. Then vaidhi. Then Raganuga, then it's Bhava and Prema. So, as the first five chapters is Samanya Bhakti, so then there is also one summary essay for those five chapters. It's basically define the main principles and their application in the process of Samanya Bhakti. So the main principles means the principles of the Samanya Bhakti and how those principles correspond to the principles of always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So how does it apply to you? So anyway, you can distribute this. This is like extra addition to it. Yes?
Well, what is Samanya Bhakti?
Samanya Bhakti means preliminary. It's not means whatever we're like discussing. It's like the really basics.
Right.
So
before you actually get into the
real sadhana. Because then vaidhi means you are following the sadhana as instructed. So you are following instructions. So that's, you are taking it up as your duty. You are very serious. But you may not have developed the taste for or the spontaneity for performing these activities.
Should I give it up now? Or?
Maybe later. And then also as I mentioned, then as the study guide is not fully complete. There are still some additions there. So I'm adding some points from various books. So now I'm also going through the Madhura Karambini and there are some nice points to be added. So I will just read you one point which corresponds to the third chapter, which we were defining the various categories of devotees. And about Madhyama Adhikari, there is also very nice definition of who actually Madhyama Adhikari is. So I just want to share it because you may appreciate it. So it is frequently pointed out that the pure devotee's mercy is also the cause of devotion. Just as the Lord's mercy is known to be causeless, So his devotees, who possess the same qualities as the Lord, also shower their causes mercy. Hence, when we declare that the devotee's causes mercy is the reason which inspires bhakti, but the bhakti is not being equally distributed, naturally, this will be criticized as partiality. Though it is wrong to say that the causes mercy of both the Lord and the pure devotee is prejudiced, we read in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.46. The Madhyama Adhikari offers his love to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is a sincere friend to all the devotees of the Lord, shows mercy to ignorant people who are innocent, and disregards those who are envious of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. These characteristics clearly indicate that the Madhyama Adhikari devotee does not distribute his mercy equally to everyone. The truth is that the Supreme Lord is subservient to his devotee's wishes. Therefore, he emulates his devotee in distributing mercy. Based on this fact, it is easy to see that if the Madhyama devotee is merciful to someone, the Lord automatically showers his mercy on that recipient. This conclusion is sound in all respects. The single cause that attracts the mercy of the Lord is the bhakti that permanently resides in the pure devotee's heart. In other words, Krishna's mercy will not be invoked without that bhakti within the heart of his devotee, which attracts his mercy to appear in the first place. Therefore, because bhakti is completely independent, even from previous piety and good fortune, it is undisputedly confirmed that bhakti is self-manifest. As mentioned earlier, devotion is the only cause of devotion. Bhakti Devi does not require any cause or reason to appear other than her own sweet will. So, these are very nice points actually to be taking note of. Who actually Madhyama Adhikari is, and then what is he expected to do? So we read about Madhyama Adhikari, then he is the one who he knows the scriptures, but maybe not so elaborately. He may not be able to argue with everybody, but the main principle is that he will not get shaken if somebody defeats him. Some defeats in philosophical arguments, meaning he doesn't know how to answer back, but he is convinced that the process which he follows, this is the only one, and that's the way how he can purify himself. So he has firm faith, but he may not be expert, not yet. And based on that, also, there is the explanation of Madhyama Adhikari this way, that he discriminates. So he sees dualities. And therefore he deals with those people who are interested in devotional service, or even those who are neutral to devotional service, as basically friendly. He is trying to naturally give them the treasure which he considers the best. But people who disregard, and he may not feel, he may not have any relationship to those people, and then he may not feel very confident in how he can argue with them or how he can deal with them, so then he disregards. So we may take it that actually this is partial. And we may take it, actually, it's bad. But as Srila Prabhupada points here, then it's not so. Because the Lord, he is merciful to everybody. But the mercy manifests only in that person, only when we remove the covering of ignorance which we are having in the form of our false ego. So when it's removed, then the propensity of the jiva to serve the Lord manifests. So then we can perform bhakti. When we perform bhakti, Krishna is naturally attracted. And it will create more desire to perform more bhakti. So without that impetus, there will not be attraction. Krishna is attracted to those who, for some reason, they want to develop relationship. So they have some little faith that Krishna can do something, the devotee can do something. So when we develop relationship, then that creates the impetus for Krishna to be interested how he can help us. But if we don't have that interest, then Krishna just see we are not ready. And he may not take note. So therefore, the causeless mercy of the devotee is so important. Now, how we deal with it, then this will make our progress. So we have to understand this in a very proper light. See, the Uttama Adhikari, he doesn't discriminate. He does not see the false ego. He sees that each and every jiva is potential servant of the Lord. And if he is not now, he is going to be tomorrow or the day after. It's a question of time. So he deals with them that way. But the Madhyama Adhikari, then he sees those who dynamically, they want to do something, even though if they are covered, then he sees, yes, there are potential devotees. Help them. But if he sees that somebody is, you know, repelling the devotion to come, so then he may not know how to deal with that person, so he just stays away. Yes. That he gives the proper arguments.
He can give, strong arguments, he can defeat.
Yeah, because, see, the Uttama Adhikari, he is very, he knows the conclusions of the scriptures. He is self-realized person. So then he will know how to explain the Shastra based on his, through his guru's eyes.
He's not seeing the conditioning of the person that he's defeating.
See, he may see. Srila Prabhupada, he was undoubtedly Uttama Adhikari. He comes here to help us to go back to Godhead. He must step down, or he puts himself in the position of Madhyama Adhikari. He doesn't lose his position of pure devotee, actually, who descends from the spiritual world. But he takes the position of a teacher. As a teacher, he must see the faults of his disciples. So then he points out what's wrong. If he wouldn't do that, he will not be able to point out a mistake. He will not be arguing. He will just, take the position that there is nothing to change. So it's Srila Prabhupada's mercy that he did something like this.
So they see the soul, they see the person, they don't see the material
conditioning,
but they can, if needed.
They may see, and they even see maybe the conditioning, but for them the conditioning is just a fraction of time. So what's the point? Why spending time to try to do something? And if somebody is very dynamically, very much, they may just even give the association. Shukadev Goswami, he sees that Parishad Maharaj wants to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Shukadev Goswami takes it as an opportunity to remember Krishna more intensely. He is not taking it that now he is going to teach him 7 days and he's going to be looking at the watch and then, and it's nothing like this. He takes the opportunity. But if the opportunity is not there, he still will go and he will be reciting Bhagavatam and he will be talking, maybe even to the animals. He doesn't care to whom he, because whatever it is, he will be engaged in Krishna Katha. But when he talks to Parikshit Maharaj, Parikshit Maharaj asks a question. He sees, okay, he doesn't understand, so he elaborates more. He makes sure that he understands. Because he is the teacher, he is in position of teacher when he talks to him. Otherwise, if now the teacher cannot give the knowledge, make sure that the student cannot understand the knowledge, how he can realize it? If he cannot realize it, what's the point? Then it's a waste of time. As Chanakya says, don't become guru, teacher, parent, or a king if you cannot elevate your subject in spiritual life. So it's very important. So the Uttama Adhikari, he may decide that it's his own sweet will. Same as the Lord. He wants to not bring the conditioned soul up. Then he must come to the platform to which they will understand.
I was thinking the exact same thing. My sister-in-law is a Christian and she said, God can't come here. And I said, how can you say God can't do anything? You know, so it's a similar thing that maybe he doesn't come. He comes according to how he likes, but he can't say he can't. So the same as the Uttama Adhikari, he can't say he can't see the condition that he has, you know, because he can if he needs to.
Of course. And similar what we are applying, you know, according to Rupa Goswami's instruction, that we should see the good qualities in others. It does not mean that we don't see the bad qualities, but we may consider it's just a temporary. What's the point of wasting time pointing it out and talking about it and not, what's the point? It's a question of time. If that devotee with his bad qualities continues chanting, engaging himself in devotional service, it will go away. So it's temporary. So why do we waste time in something which is temporary? Now, if the same person is out under our care, it's our responsibility to point it out to him. But not just to see, I can also do it, I can also see. But as a well-wisher, to make sure that he gets rid of these qualities. But that can be only done if he takes shelter of us. So based on that relationship, if we get the influence over him, so we can do that. But if there is no influence, there is no relationship, then what's the point? It's just criticizing. Or just showing that we are better, that we can find out. And that leads to atheism. Because if we want to, we can find bad quality on anybody. That was the point when Dronacharya asked Yudhishthira Maharaj and Duryodhana to go and find. Duryodhana was supposed to find the person who has all good qualities. And Yudhishthira Maharaj was supposed to find the person who has all bad qualities. And both of them came empty-handed. So then he asked Duryodhana, "No, where is your person?" "I could not find anybody. Everybody has at least some bad quality. I could not bring." And Yudhishthira Maharaj, he also came empty-handed. So and his answer was, "I did not find anybody who has only bad qualities. Everybody has some good quality. So I didn't bring anybody." So again, the dualities, how we perceive people, how we discriminate, then we will see. But the point is, we may see the quality, but we should understand, we see it because we can recognize it. Same like a thief can spot another thief because he knows how thief behaves. But if he does not want to be thief anymore, then he is not going to be behaving the same way. He is not going to misuse that. So we see the bad quality, then we should just see, well, it's just a temporary. If you have influence, okay, no, try to fix, no, correct it. If not, then what can you do? Anyway, it will not help. And at the same time, try to see that the same devotee must have some good qualities. You may have a devotee, and the devotee was doing so much devotional service, he did so many good things. And then suddenly one day, something happens and he may fall down. And then why is it that suddenly the same devotee who before he was spoken so nicely and everything was so nicely given, then now nobody can talk about and it's taboo and everything. Why? Because we don't understand the principle. Otherwise you could not say it like this. Maybe he fall down. Yes. Maybe yes. That's one instance. Anybody can, because Maya is very strong. But how that one fall down can erase everything what he had done? That's nonsense. The qualities still remain. Now, we should care to see actually what happened. And how can we help him again to come to the same position? We help him, we help ourselves. So that's the meaning. That's the meaning of discrimination. This is how we use intelligence. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Those who are Vajnanandis, they tend to retract and see, like, when they get to the Pramukhapatana, that everything, everybody's perfect, but they don't need really to interact. But the Vajnanandis, in the case of Prabhupada, they need to interact. So that's why they go down to the Madhyamata, right?
See, they don't go down to, they just only manifest that, like, the qualities. So then, it's something which the others can relate to.
Okay.
So he is not dropping down to the Madhyamaka platform. He is just manifest something which the others can come up. So Srila Prabhupada, he didn't lessen his qualities. No way. He just... If Srila Prabhupada would descend here and he remains completely aloof, he will be constantly in spiritual world, and we could not relate to. Because he is so pure that we have no way how to actually understand him at all. So then we do mistakes, and then he, by his causes mercy, he corrects us. Then we know, okay, we should do it a different way. But if he wouldn't correct us, then we think, oh, that's correct, that's good. And then it will be just mental platform. We will just doing whatever we want and thinking that we are on bhava or prema. But in fact, we will be just on mental platform and, basically hippies. There's nobody. So we need guru who can correct us.
Yeah, so in his case, if you like, for example, very... just taking material analogy. The president of a country who, in another instance, is correcting his child. He didn't lose his post, because in that moment he is also looking in the correction of his child.
It's like you want, like you say, you want to correct the child, so you have to explain to him in his language. Mm-hmm. You have to use his examples, whatever he understands. You cannot talk like to adult. He will not know what you are talking about, and then the purpose of language will not be fulfilled. There is no communication. It's only one way communication. He doesn't understand what you are talking about. So then you may say, I told him, but he didn't understand. So what was the point? He will not follow you. So then it was your fault because you, did not act as a father. You act as an adult. So there has to be always, and that's the purpose of discrimination. So you have to discriminate. You have to see whom you are talking to. You are talking to your friend. You talk one way. You can be very open, and can be emotional. However you will talk to your intimate friend. But you talk somewhere, say, like court judge, so you wouldn't talk the same way. You have to, so discrimination is a natural propensity of the intelligence. So then who knows how to discriminate in which situation, and then he is considered more intelligent. What can you do? It's a function of the intelligence. Yeah?
Mathematiker is, he might not be able to give arguments from the scriptures. So my question is it possible to not fully understand the process and therefore not be able to instruct people who are maybe in another situation or position than oneself to be a mathematiker? To not be able to explain or understand the full process, to somebody who is in another...
Means for him to be on the platform and not to be able to understand.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you see, he may not fully understand the process as the details, but he understands the principles. Because he understands the principles, then he is already fixed that this process is the right one. I may not know how it works, how can I see Krishna in this brick. I may not know how I apply that, seeing beautiful woman reminds me of Krishna. He may not know this. But he knows it's possible. He is firmly convinced that it is. And why? Because of Guru Sadhu Shastra. But I may not see it yet. But if I follow the process of Sarana Bhakti, I will come to know. It is firm belief. This devotee, this is pure devotee, and he is in the progress. And if he keeps maintaining his belief, his faith, he will undoubtedly progress step by step, and he will reach Krishna Prema. But even though he may have gone through the process of anartha nivritti, means most of the anarthas are gone, there are still few left. He must be able to give those on the path as he progresses. Sometimes even like for very senior devotees, sometimes there are few traces of last anarthas, and because of that they may not be able to cross past bhava. So that has to be given. But the Madhyamadhikari, even though he may still have some anarthas, but he is firmly convinced that this is the progress. This is the process. And as soon as he does, as he follows that, he's dynamically progressing. That's the definition. So he may, and he will not really know, he may not have, he doesn't know what it is for a devotee to be on the platform of bhava. He doesn't know what it is, platform of prema. He read somewhere, he has no experience of it. In the city of Swarup, yes, but no, because of covered by ignorance, then no. But he may have some understanding. And because of that, then he will act such a way so he will get full understanding, like Narad Muni. he, by association with Mahabhagavatas, he gets a glimpse of understanding what actually devotional service is. Then when his mother dies, he is not sitting there and lamenting, what will I do? I'm 5 years old and then I don't know what to do. Nobody cares. I'm orphan. No. What is this? Krishna, why are you doing this to me? He's not doing that. He knows, okay, well, I could not help it, but this is my opportunity. Now I can go and realize Krishna. Because he's firmly convinced that this is the process. So he goes and he achieves self-realization. So if he can, why can't we? Yes, so he knows the principle, but he may still not be able to apply the principles in each and every situation. But in the situation which he doesn't know how to apply, he knows it's applicable. He has full faith. The neophyte, he sees something and says, oh, this is some discrepancy there. That doesn't work. I have to now buy some New Age book and apply that principle because this is not good. But Madhyamadhikari wouldn't do that. He knows there is a way. I don't know it. But by the help of other devotees, help of the Lord, I will find it. That's Madhyama. Yeah? Yeah. Okay. So this is nice point to meditate on. Okay, and then we are going through the important items. So the fifth one, right? We are on.
Yes.
One should learn to bow down immediately upon seeing the deity or the spiritual master. Now, this is also important one. Now, what does bow down means? Now, when you go for Mangalarati, and then as the curtains just slightly open, then you see everybody is lying down, right? And then the curtains open, then the deities are there, you know, wanting the darshan of the devotees, and there is nobody, just everybody is lying down. So actually, the proper way of how to bow down is, you wait for the curtain to open. You take darshan of the Lord, and then you bow down. It's the Lord, he is waiting for the darshan of his devotees. So he wants to see some reciprocation. So therefore, just take darshan of the Lord and then you bow down. And same with the spiritual master. It's like, you may see spiritual master from distance. Okay, you can bow down. But that doesn't mean that you already bow down. When you go and he is coming closer to you, then you can, Hare Krishna. And then when there's opportunity, okay, now you can bow down again. It doesn't do any harm to you, unless you have some arthritis or, something like that. But otherwise, there is no problem. But then you should keep eye contact. And when you, finish again, just have eye contact. And bow down does not mean the physical process of bowing down. It's mainly why are bowing down. You have to be you have to understand that it's due to respect for the Lord or for the person. Then when you understand this, then you get the full benefit of you bow down. So that's the meaning. Now, if you say carry something, you may carry deity, and now you see a spiritual master, then it doesn't mean you put deity on the floor and you bow down. You bow down in your mind, based on the circumstance, that you should. But you are doing some other service. You don't give up the service, no, for doing some other. You have to find a solution. So you are having the deity. You have to take care of deity. You have to carry the deity. And then, even though you are seeing your spiritual master, then you bow down in your mind, but you continue carry deity with full attention. That's important. Otherwise, no. What's the point? It's just you must, or you want that your, no, that the spiritual master sees, he must see you bowing down. But that's in some circumstances not possible. So you have to work the situation out. But you, in every circumstance, yes, you should bow down to your spiritual master. But what exactly it means, then you have to, according to the time plus the circumstance, you have to apply. Yes, Mataji?
The deities, this is very new for me. It's taking darshan before you pay obeisance.
Oh, okay. Actually, it's first from the waist, you go down to the feet, and then you go to the face. That's how the actually devotees greet Krishna when he's coming to Dwaraka. And yes, so now first you see him. Now you have prana mudra, you see the Lord, and then once you take the darshan, then you bow down. Now, same like you would do with, say, spiritual master, right? He comes to and asking some question, and you just know you're on the floor, kind of like, and you don't even hear what he is asking. And then when you say, yes, okay, he goes away, what did he say? What's the point? Where is the relationship? He comes to you, so immediately you'll be alert, listen what he is saying. And then, as he finishes, then just, okay, no, this is it. This is what you wanted. Yes, I'll do that. Then you bow down. Yes.
I've read that he was in this one book on deity worship that were using it for the Mayapur Academy, and there's a quote, I believe, from Hari Bhakti Vilas that is describing the types of flowers that can be offered. So one of those types is flowers that you're holding in your hand when you bow down. And I'm wondering, when we offer Pushpanjali for the deity, sometimes, I've been in some situations where we're told not to bow down, but often we're encouraged to bow down after offering each time. And we have the flowers in our hands. So what is understanding?
Okay, look, there are some ways. When you bow down, you have to know you have either for the men then full dandavats or panchanga pranam. So panchanga means the five limbs, right? So you have legs, you have feet, and elbows, hands and elbows, and then the head. So you bow down that way. Now it's. So that should be done. Now, if you have something, say, you may have a bead bag, right? And you cannot put it away quickly. It's a possibility that you may be holding the bead bag, and without it touching the ground, then you may do the flowers. You may be holding the flowers without it touching down to the floor. You may pay the obeisances, but you have to be very conscious of that. It's so better not to. But no, it's impossible. So Pushpanjali, you're holding the flowers. So then you may hold the flowers, such a way so then they don't touch the floor, and then you may offer the obeisance. You should not be holding one hand up and on one hand paying obeisance. It should not be done. So if you cannot do that, then rather just put the flowers somewhere. If you can, or keep them in the chadar. That's why chadars are good. And then you may tie it such, quickly just fold it, so then they halt, you pay obeisances. There are many ways how we can, according to the place and circumstance, apply. But nonetheless, the principle is that when you pay, then you should, touch your feet, your hands, and your head. Yeah.
I have another question regarding paying obeisances.
Okay.
First, when I came here, I was told that when you pay obeisances, that you should have your right hand flat on the floor and your left hand should either be... First, I was told it should be fully covering your right hand, and I was told it should at least be partially covering. And then again, I was told that having your hands flat on the floor is not important, and it's supposed to be with the side of your hand, and your hand should be folded like this. So what is there...
Okay, the principle, it's actually that when you are paying obeisance to spiritual master, then when you touch his feet, then in fact you should touch right foot with the right hand, left with the left.
Okay.
So you cross your hands.
Okay.
Now, to that, when you pay obeisances, then to symbolize that, you can put the hands over each other.
Does it matter which way?
No, I don't think it matters. Now, another way how to do it is you can pay dandavats with pranam mudra, you cross your thumbs, which symbolizes the same thing.
Okay.
But you have to be conscious, you have to know why you are doing it.
Yes, that's why I wanted to ask.
Then you, because you are paying obeisance to spiritual master, so actually you are now touching his lotus feet.
Mm.
And not just to symbolize it, then that's how you do it. So if you do it like this or like this, it's... it doesn't matter. Now, you may see some devotees, and when they pay obeisances, dandavats, then they cross their feet.
Yes.
There is no need for that. From what I understand, I don't know where they took it from, but from what I understand, it's sometimes that when the ladies pay obeisances, so then with the feet, they catch their sari, so then it cannot be moved, right? So it's possible that someone seen it, their mothers not doing it, so then could have been this, but there is no, from what I know, scripture reference that man crosses his feet while he pays obeisances.
One more doubt I have,
mm-hmm.
is that I was paying my obeisances, holding my bead bag and my hands off of the floor one time, and a devotee told me that when you're paying obeisances, you're touching the feet of your spiritual master, so you don't want to put your bead bag on his feet.
True. So, as I said, you should not do it. It should not become a habit.
Okay.
But in emergency, or if you don't have place to put the bead bag at the moment, then you can do that, but it's not the best.
But I've seen the devotees throw the bead bag here at the back of the neck. It didn't look very...
It's Tulsi Devi. We have to deal with Tulsi Devi now, appropriately. You can't deal with her just any way you want. Throwing her, shaking, and like that, that's not good. She needs proper respect. No, so don't do this, things like that. Yes.
So when I come to the temple and I pay my obeisances, I'm in my dochi and this chatter, and I have my bead bag with me. What do I do with the bead bag?
Okay. Well, you can put the bead bag on your neck, but it actually belongs, and. You can just pay obeisances with that. That's...
So the japa will be inside the bead bag, right?
Yes.
But it'll be under me.
Well, yes. Or if you have the opportunity, then place. But you should also be very careful, because you are supposed to be protecting Tulsi Devi. right? She is the manifested no as your bead. So you are the one who is giving protection. So if you hang her somewhere and don't see her for no sometimes even hours because you are doing some other service, that doesn't really show that you do care very much. So all these now hanging beadbags somewhere on Nishimarev's door, there throughout the Mangalarati and even after, that's not really, it's not the best. The beadbag should be always with you.
Something we never talk really deeply about, so, and it's part of the process. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're sitting down and we just, to be convenient, to just go down and...
Not good. No, you shouldn't do that. You should always, unlock your legs and then just pay full Panchanga Pranam. It's not a yoga class.
But sometimes you do see it's
Good. And sometimes you see, like, also, see, Pagom is like during Tulsi, Kirtan. Mm-hmm. Here in Mayapur you don't see it much. But in the West devotees do that very often. Then they water Tulsi Devi and immediately pay obeisances while the Kirtan is going on. Sometimes even the person who is actually not singing, so he just, in between when he doesn't sing, then he just quickly pays obeisances. And, or they, even with the Mriranga sometimes just, somehow manages kind of like it to, there is no need for that. As long as the Kirtan is going on, just everybody should be involved in the Kirtan and going around and it should be, And then after the Kirtan, everybody just pays obeisances. Yes. There's no need kind of like it just to show, my special, attention, that I need to, I'm better, because I can do it, There's no need for that. Yes.
But the hands, they're supposed to be touching. So sometimes there's not so much space, and I've seen devotees who will put the head on the hands. Is that a problem?
It's also okay. It's also alright.
That's alright.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. Sometimes it's really like so cramped. Yeah, it's alright. Yeah, it's see the ritual itself. It's just the media to invoke actually why you pay obeisances. So even if you are paying obeisances, in your mind, but you are actually paying obeisances, then that's better than if you just symbolically just to pay obeisances even without knowing what they are doing. So we have to be, the best is to be conscious of what we are doing, so mentally prepared, doing it in our mind, and physically perform. Then you get the best result. Okay, we have a few minutes.
Okay, when you go into the temple, many times I was told that you pay obeisance immediately. Sometimes the person is closed. Is that the correct thing?
You see, when you come to the temple, and if you are not alone there, then it's good to greet the Vaishnavas. You can go and to each and every Vaishnava pay obeisances, or you can just pay obeisances to all the Vaishnavas present there. But the deities, if it's not their time and maybe they didn't even wake up, then you should not be paying obeisances to the deities yet. Because when you do, then it does disturb them. So they may, because they immediately catch that there's somebody is paying attention, so they feel that. But they are still in the process of taking rest. So just for their consideration, then we should not do that. Similarly, also, it's not good to go around deities when they are closed. Because they also are, they pay attention to the devotee, you know, who is actually circumambulating. So they are, they cannot pay attention either, you know, to the puja or whatever is happening. I mean, they can't see, they are the supreme, right? But for our consideration, that why would we, you know, do it? Why we want to take advantage of that we want the attention of the Lord right now? So we can just walk on the side. But when we come to the temple, then yes, pay obeisance to the Vaishnavas. And then wait, and when the deities open, then pay obeisance to the deities.
So recapitulate, I arrive to the temple, so it's a re-education program.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like I wash my hands, my feet, I learn that.
Yes.
Go in, pay obeisance to the Vaishnavas.
Yes.
To Prabhupada.
Yes, go to the Prabhupada, you pay obeisance to Prabhupada. If he is already up. Temples also, they either dress him before or, you know, or they wake him up just before the deities wake up. No, you see. And that's also consideration. Now, if the deities are sleeping, Srila Prabhupada is sleeping, should you be inside the temple? No, so, here, no, Prabhupada is awake, so we come and then we chant there with Prabhupada. But also it should be, no, if the deities are sleeping, it should be quiet chanting. It should not be, no, loud, no, screaming. There's no need for that. We have to take into consideration the deities. So yes, you come, no purpose to the Vaishnavas, then to Srila Prabhupada, and then just go on and chant.
What about Garuda?
Yes, if you are coming through that other door, then no, Garuda, you offer, if there is Mahadev, you can offer to Mahadev as the Vaishnavas. Because there are the topmost Vaishnavas. And then you chant, and when the curtain opens, then you pay obeisance to the deities. Yes. Yes. Okay.
Just on the same point, it means that when the doors are not open and we come to the temple, we also shouldn't ring the bell when we enter.
The bell, no, well, you can, but do it softly. Have a consideration for the deities, right? So if they are still not taking rest, see, you are not the center of the attention. So it's not that, look, I'm coming. No, it's not that. The mood should be, no, you are entering into the deity's house. It's like you are coming to wake somebody up, see your spiritual master, and no, so you don't on the door, hey, get up, get up. No, you don't do that. So even if he asks you, wake me up, so still you enter the room and then, no, very softly, and see, maybe he's still resting. If he is, then there is some way how to wake him up. If he is not, then no, you knock on the door very softly, and then, now if he is not, then he will answer. If he is, then maybe not, and then you just find way how to wake him up very softly, and then, no, proper way. But you have to show the proper mood, proper attitude. So same with the deities. When you know that they are still not resting, then you deal with how you would with a person who is resting. There are persons. So that's it. It's just using common sense. Then you become conscious of how you should perform your devotional service. Yes?
For a man, is paying panchanga obeisances, is it only for situations where there's not enough space, or are there other times when you should only pay that kind of obeisances and not?
No, dandavats can be paid in, no, every situation. There is no limit to,
okay,
to what. But yeah, for even the panchanga pranam can be paid. See, it's not regarded actually that Dandavats is higher than Panchanga. It's recommended that, you know, for the man paying Dandavats, because then you can more get close to actually who you are. Then, but again, if you are not proud in your mind and you pay Dandavats, the Dandavats will not help you. So if, whenever you can, just pay Dandavats. That's the best.
So what does it say sometimes that when paying obeisances to Tulasi Devi or other female personalities that you should not pay Dandavats?
I never heard that. You could, if there is, but generally, no, for Tulsi, no, everybody is around her, so that there is no really space how to. But if you would pay Dandavas to Tulsi Devi, it's not bad. Okay, whatever.
When we're paying obeisances to Mahadev, are we supposed to have our right side facing him?
To Mahadev?
Yeah.
Well, as he would for a Vaishnava. So you can do it like how we would pay it, say, no, to your spiritual master.
Front, right? Facing him.
You can do. Sorry?
The role of the
Mother Brahma TV is different now.
And the ladies were
doing Dandavat Parakha when they're on the side. Yeah. So is that okay for special order? Well, we don't do. Well, the best just ask your spiritual master. No, if he says, if he recommends, then it's okay. But for. No, in our sampradaya, it's not necessarily done. But then just consult it with your spiritual master. I mean, yeah, you see, it's the point is that the ladies don't pay dandavas because Krishna doesn't want to see the breast touching the ground. But so on the side, some may do, but please just ask.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama.